Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, Chris Evans here with this week's edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the always hilarious, intriguing, interesting and interested Josh Widdicombe chatting his brand new book, Watching Neighbours Twice a Day, How 90s TV Almost Prepared Me for Life. The smartest man in most rooms, Richard Osman, discusses his incredible new novel, The Man Who Died Twice. The brilliant, funny Mark Watson is here to tell us what to expect from his massive 73-day tour. This can't be it. Plus, another comedian and friend of Mark and husband to our very own Rachel, Alex Horn, shares all about his brand new book, Bring Me the Head of the Taskmaster, 101 next-level tasks and clues to lead you to victory. All of that and so much more to come. Vassis Alexander, over to you.
He's a star of stand-up, a prince of podcasting, a titan of telly, and now an acclaimed author. His new book, Watching Neighbours Twice a Day, How 90s TV Almost Prepared Me for Life, is out tomorrow. So please welcome a man who has Scott and Charlene to thank for everything, apparently. It's the wonderful Josh Widdicombe.
Morning,
hello.
Josh.
How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Great. What a song. Lovely to hear
it. Isn't it? It's good, isn't it? So this book, it is a love letter to the telly of the 90s. First of all, before we talk about what's in it and your take on telly, tell us about where you watched telly, where the telly was for you. I used to watch telly as a kid a lot on the floor, more than on the sofa. Just give us a sense of where you were watching and how you were watching before we talk about what you were watching.
Okay, so I grew up in Devon on Dartmoor, and so I lived in a kind of house in the middle of nowhere. And half my house was my gran's house, and I'd watch some of it in that with my gran, and half of it I'd watch on my own, kind of on the sofa. I'd just sit on the sofa, or I'd sit on the floor, and it was like, you know, the TV, you can't go too close to the TV in those days because it's like dangerous for some reason that you don't know.
Which
why.
It wasn't at all, was it?
Well, I don't know.
You'll ruin your eyesight.
Yeah, exactly.
No, my jeans will ruin my eyesight, mostly.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the sun, perhaps, but not like Channel 4. That's not going to ruin my eyesight.
No, that wasn't the reason I'm wearing glasses now. So I'd sit there and I would just watch TV. Unlike now, when I watch TV and I'd have my phone out, or I'd watch TV and I'd be pottering, you're actually watching the television.
Yeah.
You were consciously, everything that were on it, that was all you were doing.
Did you love the telly?
I adored it. I didn't realise how much I adored it. I was, like, I grew up on Dartmoor, so people into Outward Bound stuff. I had no interest in that kind of stuff.
Just going out, you were Outward Bound. Going for a loaf would involve a compass and a flare, I would imagine.
Yeah, of course. We had a post office that's since closed down, and that was all we had in our village.
But it is like a window into another world, depending on which programme you're watching. And I suppose the more isolated you are, not that you were completely isolated, but Dartmoor, you know, it's not the densest, most densely populated place on the planet, is it? You know, and I know what you said, because from what I've read, I haven't read all your books. I usually do read all the books, but I had this awards thing to do yesterday, which is very, very important. The NHS/ Who Cares Wins Awards, which is amazing. But Rachel's read your book cover to cover. I can't wait to read it in full. But, you know, it's escapism and also a desperation to therefore then go and actually escape and find out, go and seek out nirvana. Because some programmes you could sort of probably get to one day in the future, and others were completely fictional. So you know, in a league table of the genre of telly that you enjoyed, how would you categorise that, those different programmes?
Well, I kind of, so obviously you'd go through these phases. So when I was like first started for the when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, whatever, all we wanted to do was live on Ramsey Street. Do you know what I mean? And all we do, and it's that, you know, the cliche of you had to have watched Top of the Pops in the 80s or the 70s to be able to talk about it. You had to have watched Neighbours. You had to have watched it to talk to people the next day at school. We lived our lives as much on Ramsey Street as we did in real life.
Yeah.
And like rewatching these shows to write this book, almost, it sounds mad, but it's almost a more vivid memories than your actual childhood of watching these. Watching Gladiators, like, hits me like a kind of nostalgic.
Gladiators is a good show, wasn't it? Now, Ramsey Street's interesting. And by the way, everybody chip in. This is a free-for-all. See, because Neighbours, you know, I was sort of too old for Neighbours, even though it was a massive phenomenon. But because I was hosting The Big Breakfast, which I know you talk about in the book, and very, very, very fondly, so thank you so much for that. But we had a lot of guests on from Neighbours, which I didn't really get, but all the kids who watched the show loved, you know, the people that we had on. So that was a funny old thing as far as I was concerned. And so other references in your book, you know, because I think you have a very wise and witty and pithy head on young shoulders, or younger than my shoulders anyway. But I do think you're quite old for your time. And I think I was quite old for my time as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know what I said? Do you know what I mean about that? Do you get the sense of that of yourself?
I totally. And I think it's because my parents, I grew up, my parents were hippies, and so there was very few little rules. And so I was watching everything from very early on. So I was watching, like, Bottom at the age of 9 and 10.
Because I thought you weren't even born when some of these programmes were on, but you were just about.
Yeah, I was just, but they would just be on the TV. I remember watching Have I Got News For You when I didn't know, I didn't even understand what was going on.
I mean, it's still a good show, but it was a great show.
Yeah,
back in the day.
And I'd watch all these shows and it would feel just so exciting and so vivid and so different from my life. Obviously, without, you know, TFI Friday was probably the most... I say in the book, like, TFI Friday Bar was felt to me like the most exciting place on the earth.
It was better than the Star Wars bar. It was better than that. Well, thanks for writing the book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a genuine pleasure to talk to you about it.
We haven't talked at all about your stand-up ticket.
Don't worry about that.
JoshRidicombe.com. Just go there and find out what he's up to, other than what he's just been up to for the last hour. Josh.
Oh, thank you so much.
Joy to see you. This book, Josh Widdicombe, Watching Neighbours Twice a Day, How 90s TV Almost Prepare me for life. What did it miss out?
There were certain things that, you know.
All right. Have a great day, Josh.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
Ta-da! Josh Widdicombe, everyone! Woo!
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our next guest is utterly pointless and very House of Games, and you can always find him sitting on top of your local bestseller list. The riotous Thursday Murder Club crew returned yesterday in The Man Who Died Twice, and of course, Kent's answer to the Fab Four are already number one, like Fulham. So please welcome the genius of Richard Osman.
Morning, Rich.
Morning, everybody. How lovely to be here. I was here last year. It was all a dream back then.
Mate, we are so pleased for you.
Oh, thank you.
We are so... I mean, you weren't struggling to put bread on the table. It has to be said beforehand. But I'm just so pleased for you that you're so successful in something that you always wanted to do. 40-odd weeks at number one. I mean, Vassa said there in the local... You'll find him atop your local bestseller list, which is true, but also the international bestseller list. And you've just knocked yourself off the top. Tell us about how that feels.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's crazy. I've always tried to do things I love, and that's what you must do in your career, isn't it? And usually that's when you have the most success. But yeah, I remember coming in last year, and I remember being number one for the first week, and I thought, remember this moment, because sometimes you have success in life and it's very fleeting. So I was really thinking, remember this week because it will pass. And it's a year later and it's still number one. Well, now it's number two because of The Man Who Died Twice. So it's, I haven't quite been able to relax and think about it yet.
I mean, what you had, you know, it was you versus all comers, and none of them, the rest of the world's fictional authors. Or authors of fiction, maybe they are fictional authors. Yeah. Maybe that's why they can't knock you off the top.
A lot of them are. Lee Child doesn't exist.
Yeah, authors of fiction together couldn't knock you off the top. And so you said, don't worry, I got this. I'll knock myself off the top. So are you now number one and number two?
Yes, currently.
That would work. That would be how it works.
It's a little bit Ed Sheeran-y, isn't it?
Well, the first band ever to have three number one with their first three singles was?
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Correct. The second band?
Oh, Spice Girls? Westlife, maybe.
It was actually Take That.
Was it?
And then it was Westlife. Then it was... I think the Spice Girls were the first band in the world to have five number ones with their first five singles.
It's Not bad going, is it?
Yeah, good pub.
I'll see if I can be the Spice Girls in a few years' time.
You know, you could be perceived as an upstart in the literary world, but I think people have had to fall on their critical swords now, haven't they?
Well, you know, that's the nice thing. I've always been a reader, and so I think that people, you know, it's lovely when writers read the book and enjoy it. And it's
nice. Fair enough.
Yeah, and it's nice that around the world people are reading it because they don't know who I am from telly, so they're just reading the book. They're just enjoying the characters and the story. So, you know, I think, you know, if you're doing well in Japan, then that's not because of pointless celebrities. So I think I finally feel like a real author. We recently had trouble in Croatia. They pirated a lot of copies of the book. Somehow they found a copy of The Man Who Died Twice. I don't know where they got it from. Some idiot had left it on a beach. And yeah, they pirated copies of it. Can you believe it's cost me an absolute
spoilers all over Croatian
fortune.
Twitter. Yeah.
Just to explain the context behind that ruse.
Oh, well, Vassos, I believe you left your... I believe you had an early copy.
I had a review copy.
By the way,
copy.
It's a privilege, not a right. Mm. Okay? And it can be taken away.
He took it away. He took it to Croatia.
Yeah, he really did. Like one of those errant MI6 officials who leave documents on a train.
Yes, that's left exactly it on a sun what lounger. I did. I did, to be fair, Richard, go back to the beach, which was at least a four-minute walk.
I thought he was going to say I went back to Croatia. I literally flew back to Croatia.
I don't believe this story. Did you really leave it on the beach?
Yep.
Why? Wow.
I left it on a beach because...
But it was a proof copy. It's really, like, important.
I went back to the beach. Had you been drinking, Vassos?
Yes. Yeah, and there you go. And there was, I went to the guy and I said, like, I left my book on the beach. He goes, oh, no, no problem. It'll be there. And then just next to the bar, they had a blanket out with all the lost property. There was sunglasses. There was a lot of sun cream. And there were loads of books, none of which were yours.
Well, someone's had a touch
when
then.
When you said I left my book on the beach. You didn't leave your book on the beach. You left the property of Penguin Books on the beach.
It's indicative of the man. Isn't it?
So, because you're good on the radio and in front of the camera as well as behind, and now, you know, sitting in front of your keyboard, when you do the PR stuff, the promo around the world, they must think he's really good at this because they probably don't know about your other lives. They probably think you're this, I don't know, you've worked somewhere else, you've had this sort of moonlight fantasy idea of becoming a novelist, and you've achieved it in a Colonel Sanders way.
I love you were reaching for a reference.
Well, no, because it's people
you came up with.
You know, because Colonel Sanders did. You know, he didn't achieve commercial success until I think he was in his 80s. Because he had a little chicken shop, didn't he? And then there was a compulsory purchase of the chicken shop by whomever it was, because they put a road through his chicken shop. But he made the best deep fried. So he started to license his recipe to it, and that's how he became rich.
There you go. Yeah. Same story. Very similar story. No, you do. I'm forever doing, you know, American
Ricky Gervais,
interviews.
41 years old.
Oh, my God. I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even better than Colonel Sanders in some ways. Yeah, I think sometimes you'll start doing interviews with Australians or something, and they'll think, oh, God, who's this? Another author. And then you start mucking about with them and doing jokes, and, you know, because I love being on the radio and on the telly, and you can hear them audibly relax.
Yeah.
They just go, oh, my God, at least for the next 10 minutes, this is going to be easy. I'm not going to have to be asking questions of some taciturn author. So I love writing the books. I'm very proud of them. But I think, unusually for some authors, I love the selling of them as well. I love coming around. I love chatting to people. I love going to bookshops. I love going to independent bookshops, talking to people with me. And that's suddenly you write a book and it's so, you're just by yourself the whole time in front of a screen. And the second it comes out, you're part of a big team at the publishers and the booksellers. And that's when, yeah, I absolutely love all that. And at some point, I've got to go back and write the next one all by myself again. So I'm just going to enjoy this while I can.
And how's your new pal, Steven Spielberg?
He's all right. Yes. Well, Steve, big Steve.
Yeah. When was the last time, the most recent exchange with the Spielberg massive?
Oh, listen, I mean, he was around last night because we were watching some old episodes of Endeavour. He loves it. No, he's very well. They're supposedly filming the movie in spring next year.
Right.
But listen, you know the movie industry. Who knows?
It's a movie ball feast.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, I just leave them to it, because there's no point me thinking about it, because you never know.
Right, now you talked about Vassos letting the pirate cat out of the Croatian bag. Can I talk to you about Marlowe and about the Marlowe murder club? Have you seen that?
I'm aware there is
How are you with that? First of all, you explain what it is, because I know what it is, because I see it every day.
Well, it's there's yes, there are a number of other books now which have very similar front covers to the Thursday Murder Club, which I get. That's listen, imitation is lovely, and that one's got a similar front cover, and it's called something very, very similar.
It's called
as
the
well.
Marlowe Murder Club, is what it's called.
Yeah, and listen, it's written by someone who's written lots of stuff before, so I suspect there's nothing amiss there.
All right, so Thursday Murder Club versus The Man Who Died Twice. Mm. You know, in the heavyweight title for the world heavyweight title, yeah, for your first two books, one against the other, which book's going
to
win?
Well, people seem to like the second one even more, which is great. I mean, it might be because they know the characters. You know, if you do a TV show, people like the second series more. They say, oh, you've really hit your stride. And actually, they're just more familiar with it. So people seem to prefer it. It's got a great ending, the second one, I'll say that. And obviously, you know, that we know the characters more. So the Thursday Murder Club will always be my first child, but yeah, I mean, I would hope it's a slightly better book, because, you know, I hadn't ever written a book before, and this time I had.
Right, we'll do a quick pick, and then you got to go. Thanks, Richard.
Pleasure. Thank
well
you.
Well done, pal. Come see, you know where we are.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky
Virgin Radio.
Our next guest is an award-winning comedian who once opened a life expectancy test app and turned it into a whole new show. His brilliant This Can't Be It tour continues tonight in Maidenhead, and we're very grateful that this morning he won his battle against his alarm clock. Please welcome the always hilarious Mark Watson.
Morning, Mark.
I thought there was a very, very subtle bit of snark in that introduction, because his show was meant to be on earlier in the week, and completely failed to wake up. And I'm embarrassed to say, it's just dawned on me the vaccines are actually here then. That was live.
Yeah.
I see, because I was in the corridor and I thought, they've got that up much too loud, but it's all starting to fall into place now.
Yeah, well, you can't really tell the vaccines they've got the vaccines up too loud. You
I
can tell me that.
I just didn't understand it was the actual people,
so I
yeah.
Because they said Mark's down the corridor. I thought you were watching the vaccines, so I've been to watch the vaccines and I was looking for you and you weren't there.
No, I would have done that. I had no idea. I forgot you can actually have people in real life building situations these days. Fair
I know
play.
You more than forgot that. Was it Tuesday you were due in?
Yes, I was working extremely late on a script thing with an exacting deadline, and went to bed about 2 a.m. thinking, it's fine because I'm not the sort of person that sleeps through an alarm, but it turns out I am. So you're still learning about yourself.
It's
aren't you,
great to have you here.
It's great to be here at the second attempt.
This Can't Be It tour. It's nice to see you last night, by the way.
Yeah, so obviously my company promotes these Marlowe comedy gigs, for those people who don't know, which are the same place as Pub in the Park. And, well, long story short, the organiser was there and he thought it'd be a good idea for me to go on stage and bring Ronan Keating on. And I'm not sure if Ronan Keating himself did think it was a good idea, but we'll never know. I was given quite a limited brief, as you know, Chris. The guy said, whatever you do, don't do anything silly, just say the words Ronan Keating. And I think I executed that pretty well.
Which is the opposite brief he seems to give to himself, because once he gets the microphone, you can't shut him up, and nobody actually knows who he is.
Chris, this is another Chris. He's a fairly verbose chap, yes, but it's quite rare that I'm hired for no money to do a two-word introduction, but I got both Ronan and Keating out, and to my immense relief, Keating did walk on the stage.
But it was a lovely night, wasn't it? It was more than lovely, actually.
I really enjoyed doing the comedy shows there over the summer. But also, I must say, nice to be in actual theatres again.
Yes, great. So This Can't Be It. It's a tour called This Can't Be It. Now, we talked about Bob Geldof's autobiography last night, didn't we?
Yes.
Because he said, is that it? And I said, is this the follow-up to that?
You told me that Geldof was 70, is that right?
Yeah, he's 70 soon, I think in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, it's sort of, I mean, I should say the tour doesn't have much about Bob Geldof in it for a number of legal reasons. But yes, it perhaps comes from a slightly similar place. As we heard, I opened this, was during the pandemic, and was sort of toying with this life expectancy calculator app because I couldn't sleep. And I sort of got,
You couldn't sleep because you didn't have a radio interview to go to.
That's right. I'll never sleep again now because of what happened on Tuesday. And it was a stupid thing you sort of do at 3 a.m, especially because I sort of suddenly visited by the fear of death, like you sometimes are in the middle of the night. And the best way to deal with it is just look at football scores or have a whiskey or something. But for whatever reason, I just Googled, when will I die? And this app came. I don't recommend listeners do this, by the way, because it puts the fear of God into you. But I got this app and it gave me 78. So I'm sort of just over halfway through.
And what kind of components does it ask for?
Well, firstly, I will say I did not answer the lifestyle questions truthfully. So the 78 might have been...
Were you playing with it?
Well, you can guess what the question, how your menu answer them. So you give yourself an extra few years where you can. But it's stuff like how much you exercise, drink. I was sort of a bit liberal there with the truth. How many fruit and veg you eat, all these questions. And then it can't be very scientific.
So hang on, so 78 is erring on the side of... hyperbole for you.
If anything, I'd be delighted to get to Geldof level, yeah.
Really?
Well, of course, things change, don't they? And you maybe look after yourself better as you get older.
But you run a lot. You're a big runner.
Yeah, so they're not as much as you, I think. We found this out. But I do. My one thing I do well in is enormous amounts of running.
There's nothing of you either, so you don't overeat.
There's not loads of me, no. But sometimes you can be quite unhealthy internally, can't you? And because you're skinny, you masquerade as being good Nick. But actually, the more I sit here, the more I'm starting to feel optimistic. You're doing a good job here. I prefer you to an actual doctor, definitely.
Is that good for your comedy or bad for your comedy? Me making you feel less pessimistic or more sanguine?
Interesting one. I mean, I think you certainly wouldn't want a comedian to go on stage and say, well, everything is absolutely great, I've got no complaints, and go home.
But that sounds like an intro that you might come up with, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I think that I probably have got quite a lot of my entire comedy career out of pessimism and grumbling. But on the other hand, if you're too miserable, you struggle to do anything. So you want me to be funny, you want me at that sort of midpoint of... things are all right, so I can drag myself to the theatre, but things aren't too good. So
right, so Mark Watson's... MarkWatsonTheComedian.com is where you need to go for tickets for this 73-day tour. Now, it's already ongoing. So tonight, Mark is playing in Maidenhead. OK, how does it start? How do you sort of lull your audience into engaging with what you have to say for the next hour or two?
It was a good question. And of all comedians, I've gone to quite a lot of lengths to do that in the past. I've had quite a lot of weird beginnings to shows. There was one where I used to be typing stuff up on the screen as people came in. Already being in there as people come in. So I just took observations about people. It's a way of sort of breaking the ice, I suppose. Quite often I sit in amongst the audience. You can't do that if you get to a certain level of fame, but I've managed to dodge that. So frequently I'm in the auditorium listening to people. I'll pop up anywhere. One time I had a box on, like a sort of large crate on stage, and I was just lying in there for the first 20 minutes as people came in, and I'd pop out, and you'd hear people going, we can't be in there, that'd be stupid. And it was. But that's the thing. Over the years,
Was that your David Blaine period?
Yeah, but I didn't get as much credit for it as Blaine. And to be fair, I was much more uncomfortable than Blaine. It was really hot in there. It's just one of these... I quite often have a stupid idea. Oh, once I was on a just running on a treadmill as people came in.
Love it.
Which was a sort of metaphor for the general misery I was putting myself through at that phase of life. And I did go on to say that.
What level did you have it on?
Sorry?
What level did you have it on?
It was quite fast, but no gradient or anything like that. I don't like that sort of thing. No, I don't like... When your legs start to... Well, actually, legs complain a lot, don't they, Ronnie? It's almost your legs' least favourite thing to do. Right. So, yeah, I've basically... I think it's because, however good a comedian is, there is that awkward bit where they just... On you go. Please welcome. And it feels odd.
Well, there
odd,
is,
you know,
there isn't, isn't there? Because if you watch Seinfeld is so clinical, and people think maybe... erring on the side of cold, but he's not, because he just says, look, here's the jokes, folks, you know, and he does a straight hour. He never does more than an hour, because he says, yeah, the longer you stay up there, the more chance the audience have got of winning, and eventually you stay up there long enough and they will win. That's how he sees it. He sees it, everything as a world title fight.
Quite interesting. That's almost the opposite of my... I mean, he's much more successful than me, to be fair, so maybe he's right, but I tend to be fair, no one can compare themselves to Seinfeld and come away looking good, but I tend to see it as almost the opposite, like a community effort rather than combat. Yeah. I don't see it as, will I win or will the audience win? I prefer to see us all being on the same team, basically. So I'll do anything to try and nourish that sort of community feeling, that sense that we're... If people are, like, troublesome, I'll still deal with it. But very rarely does that happen in a sort of... in Maidenhead. Well, actually, I don't want to jinx it. There could easily be troublemakers
G3.
In Maidenhead.
Watch out for G3,
Don't
pal.
You worry. I'll have eyes on G3. They'll turn up in full sailing gear.
See, because G3, they've got to go on their own, because it's just G3. To have one ticket left... I think you should do that at every... You should say to all the venues, never sell G3.
Things I can pitch this auditorium, so I've been to Northern Fire Maidenhead quite a few times, and the stage is slightly elevated, so I'll have eyes on G3. I'll be able to see exactly who they are.
Just heard now, G3 has just been sold.
And we're also just hearing, I'm increasingly obsessed with whoever is going to be in that seat.
Of course you are.
I can't get them
out of my head. Of course you are.
I'm going to be sitting in GC myself when they turn up.
By the way, it's your gig, not mine. But why don't you have a little raffle every show, like, and today's seat of the gig is, and all the seat numbers are in your tombola, and I don't know.
Interesting idea. And I could, like, I've got, you know, I've written a novel that I normally sell after the gig. I could give those away. More and more of the show could be a raffle or tombola than I've maybe previously considered. Yeah. This is why I need these sessions. This is why...
Life's a box of chocolates.
It really is, yeah.
Mark Watson, thecomedian.com. Go and see him, because you will have a lovely evening in the company of a very clever brain.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Who are we talking to next, Marcel?
Our next guest is just basically smashing it. The new series of the BAFTA-winning Taskmaster starts next Thursday on Channel 4, and his latest book, Bring Me the Head of the Taskmaster, is out today. But his wife hasn't seen him awake all week, and she left him a basket of laundry to sort out this morning. Please welcome the busiest of busy bees, Alex Horn.
Morning, Al.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Chris. Are you live from Pinewood?
I am live from Pinewood. I'm looking out my window at the James Bond stage, and the sun is shining. It's a heat wave, Chris.
It's a heat wave. No, it really is. A lovely shooting sky. It'll cut down on the lighting cost, Alex.
Luckily, I kept all my summer clothes out, and I'm basking in the sun.
Okay, I'm just going to keep mentioning the book, because I'm not going to talk about it. I refuse to talk about it, because you're not here in person. It's Bring Me the Head of the Taskmaster, 101 Next Level Tasks, and Clues to Lead You to Victory. We might talk about it in a bit. First of all, more about Pinewood. So you are shooting Taskmaster at Pinewood. Now, I used to work at Pinewood, and it is amazing when you, because there's Goldfinger Drive there, isn't there? It's called Goldfinger Drive.
There's all sorts going on here.
And Goldfinger Drive is
around one corner. There's James Bond in another. I saw an actor this morning who I think I recognised, but I don't know who it was. But she was wearing sunglasses and looked glamorous. Yeah, so, you know, it feels exciting.
It is, because it is exciting, and this is all true. And as you enter Pinewood, you know, the Bond stage is to the far right, and it has the big 007, Walter PPK logo on the side of it. It is there. It's the one that was on the Formula One cars. That's the Formula One cars at the weekend. And it's the one we'll see when No Time to Die finally is released in a couple of weeks' time in October. But it is so sexy. It's so... Have you had a wander around? Have you been round the back of the Pinewood lot and seen that massive outdoor shooting stage that has the big blue screen behind it, which is where they do all the CGI for things like, I don't know, like Gladiator and things like that? Have you been round there?
Yes. I've seen that. I've been taken on some tours, but not the James Bond tour. When Jo Brand did the show, she insisted on it, and she was driven in a buggy through it. But I haven't got that clearance level yet.
Yeah, well, hang on a minute. I wasn't taking on any tours. I just went feral.
You just went, oh, I don't know. I don't have that courage. Should I go?
Yeah, definitely.
I guess I could.
1,000,000%.
I mean, our production manager, Vicky, got married here. You can actually, I don't think, I'm not sure you can anymore, but all her guests invaded all the stages. So maybe that's the key, just a drink and off I go.
So the reason Goldfinger Drive is called Goldfinger Drive, because if you watch Goldfinger, when the Aston Martin goes on its side, that's the avenue it goes, because they just made the use of the set because it was cheaper. That's why it's called Goldfinger Drive, isn't it?
Suppose so, but also the book's out right now and you can get it in all the shops and you've got to be quick, otherwise someone else will solve it first.
Solve what?
the book, yes. Chris, there's a book out today.
Right, go on.
Yeah.
Go on then.
It's a treasure hunt. It's like, do you remember in 1979 a book called Masquerade, Chris?
Yes, I do.
Well, it's based loosely on that, because I've found that. I've always been obsessed with that. But there hasn't been anything like it since. So finally, 42 years later, the book is here.
No, there are worldwide treasure hunts via books that have been going on for ages. And people have made friendships. I believe people have met partners, you know, future partners. Because this is a thing, but it's like you're resurrecting it, if you like. Or at least reminding people or refreshing people or enlightening people to the fact that these kind of things exist in the first place. And it is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
However, I've got to take issue with you on something. If you can't find time to come on the show to in person, and I love you, and I had this amazing TV idea for you, which you probably don't need now because you're like this sort of stratospheric...
Oh, no, yes, please.
Multimedia star. But no, I've got an amazing idea for a quiz show for you. And maybe me, I don't know, but definitely for you. But if you haven't got time to come in for that, and that is free TV gold from me to you,
right,
for free, and yes, see your wife, who you've only felt the presence of, but you don't even know it was her. It could have been someone else. You felt the presence of someone, but you can't recognise presence like you recognise someone by actually opening your eyes and saying, oh, no, it is the person that I suspected I was feeling. How the heck are you going to have time to lead the readers of this book through potentially a two-year treasure hunt? Because you're dealing with future time, Al, and I've got to tell you, future time is she's a scarlet mistress that never delivers.
Right. Well, first, I will make time to see you, Chris, and I deep regrets about not being in your presence this morning.
Well, you should have.
Yes. Second, I've built in time for the book, so I release a clue every time Cheshire United win by 2 goals, and that only happens 8 times a season. So that's all fine. They're playing Chertsey at the weekend. They won't win that. It's away. I haven't got a third. But you're right about time being a scarlet mistress. I've always thought that and always said that.
No, not time isn't. Future time is.
Future time. What colour's time and what gender?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, your wife. God, this runs in the family. She took me to task the other day because I said the sun was a he purely because of the song. The sun has got his hat on. Hip 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 hooray. Not anymore, seemingly.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
No.
Listen, we've got to go. We've got to go now. I know you've got to go. You're a big shot now. You're at Pinewood Studios. You don't ever see your family anymore.
Well, we've got an audience back today, so we do have to. We've got rehearsals, and for the first time in 2 years, we have humans in with us watching us, and it's such a joyful thing to see them back.
Well, it's already been a big hit without the audience, and also we're used to the contestants being, you know, more than socially distanced apart. Are they going to get? Is it all? Is everybody getting closer now?
Yeah. So next week, the series 12 starts on the telly, and that's our final show, socially distanced one. So they're still apart then, and then next year they'll all be back sat. Well, it feels like we're on top of each other now because it's been such a long time. So I am within touching distance of Greg, and he uses that. And yes, we filmed Champions of Champions last night, and he struck me twice.
Right, bring me the head of Taskmaster 101 Next Level Tasks and Clues to lead you to victory with Alex Horn. They're live from Pinewood and still allegedly married and living with Rachel Horn.
Bye, darling.
Bye, Rachel. Love you.
Love you.
Love you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three tip-top guests already, but still to come, our favourite chef, Tom Kerridge, tells us everything we need to know about his marvellous creation, Pub in the Park. Journalist and writer Oliver Berkman reveals how to embrace our time limitations with his new book, 4,000 Weeks. The Charlatans frontman, Tim Burgess, leafs through his brand new book, The Listening Party, inspired by his Twitter shenanigans during the first UK lockdown. And shining star Max Harwood discusses starring in the movie adaptation of the wonderful Everybody's Talking About Jamie. So let's get right back to the action versus Who's Next.
In a matter of weeks, our next guest will be a household name. I'm talking about the star of the movie that everybody's talking about. Everybody's Talking About Jamie is a film for the ages, and also for tomorrow night on Amazon Prime Video. So please welcome the spectacular Jamie himself. It's Max Harwood.
Morning, Max.
Good morning. How are you?
Max, I am fantastic. Rachel, how are you today?
Oh, I am gleaming and glowing because I watched this movie yesterday.
I know.
Oh, you did? Did you like it?
I absolutely adored it.
We're in the presence of greatness, and I can say that about you. You don't have to, but I can say that about you. I will never be able to take my eyes off you in this film. You are so captivating. Who the heck are you? Where'd you come from?
I am from Basingstoke in Hampshire. I grew up doing lots of like theatre, and then I wanted to go off and be an actor, so I trained really hard and I went to drama school. And I then in my second year of drama school here in London, I booked this job, and then the rest is really history. And I've been on this whirlwind of doing this film for the sort of the last 2.5 years.
So for people who don't speak show business, what does book this job mean?
Oh, so I went through a very, very lengthy audition process through an open casting call. I basically submitted myself because I didn't have an agent at the time. And after 7 rounds of being put in drag and singing all the songs and recording in Dan Gillespie Sales' home studio and proving that I could do everything they required me to do, they offered me the job.
And what was that like for you? So, you know, that is tortuous, but it's there's sort of rings of fire that you have to jump through. You know, you get through one, you get through two. It's verging on cruel, but it's just the way it is. So let's just briefly explain Jamie's story.
Oh yeah, so Jamie is a 16-year-old kid from Sheffield who has a dream of becoming a sensational global drag queen. And it's all about, you know, how the community around him shifts to make a safe space for him to do that and to step into his most authentic place.
Have you said that before? Because that was so concise. And
I might have. I might have said that a lot this week.
That is a cool... that saves us so much time. So well done for saying it a lot and saying it again on this show. And it's a true story.
It is a true story based on...
There is a real Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie Campbell, Life and Times of Jamie
Campbell.
And
there's a real Jamie's mum.
Real Jamie's mum, Margaret, yeah.
And we get to see Real Jamie and Real Jamie's mum in the movie.
They are. They do have little cameo roles, and it was a joy to have them on set. And for me as an actor, like, to meet and to have their support with this has just been an incredible gift. And also it's helped me really deepen my process and as an actor, you know, like with these biopic-y things. Often biopic-y things. What am I saying?
I like biopic-y things.
You don't often get to meet the person that you are playing. So for me, it was just, you know, incredible to get to do that.
Were you nervous?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, like, I think Jamie was also quite nervous to meet me. We were both, like, have this, like, innately awkward energy, like, when we first meet people.
Of course. OK, for me, right, yeah. I have been in similar situations in my career, right? And I try to be as well-behaved as possible, but, you know, sometimes I've just not been able to keep a lid on it. and how was it for you, that? Because you look amazing all the way through the film. I thought, God, you must have been such your best behaviour throughout the whole of this, because you look so well. You know, because you sparkle and because you have so much energy about you and your authenticity bursts through the screen. And that's you cannot fake that. You cannot fake that. And to have all that available to you, you have to have all yourself available to yourself in the first place in order to transmit. You can't transmit what you haven't got.
Yeah.
Right. How did you keep a lid on it?
Well, I didn't have time to, like, do pranks. Like, Lauren, I was speaking to Lauren Patel, who plays Pretty, the other day, and Lauren got asked in a junket one time, like, oh, who was the biggest prankster on set? And Lauren was like, you know, I didn't have any time to be like, go and get a whoopee cushion and put it under Max. You know what I mean? We just didn't have the time.
And no after drinks, no going out, or a few downtime?
Not really. Like, we went to Tramlines, which was a festival in Sheffield one weekend, and that was like, I think Lewis Capaldi was playing, and it was like, that was probably the only, like, downtime I really, like, allowed myself to go out, because I just had to be focused. I wanted to be on it.
Well,
I wanted to do a good
you.
Job. And also I love the story, and I was really wanted to tell it at the best of my ability and be healthy to do that.
You are so right, and I used to be so wrong. So congratulations. So it's all going, could it be going, I mean, touch wood with everything always.
Yes.
Could it be going any better than it is right now?
No, truly, I'm so grateful.
No bumps in the road, nothing at all.
Like everything, there's bumps in the road, and there's, you know, jobs that you don't get, and there's, you know, things that happen, and, you know, a pandemic, but, like, everything teaches you and makes you, like, shift your perspective, and I'm so grateful for the things that don't go well, because they teach me a lot about myself. Yeah.
Well done, you and all who sailed with you.
It is
absolutely fantastic. It's my recommendation of the year, above all the albums and books and movies and TV shows we talk about, and our commercial partners are Sky, and you can watch this via your Sky Q on Amazon Prime. But even though our commercial partners are Sky, I am saying this Amazon Prime production, this original, is if you're going to take one thing from this show all year that we have recommended, this is my number one recommendation.
Wow, thank you so much.
Mate, you are more than welcome. You're so deserving of it. And you're such a brilliant ambassador for the film and for your generation and for your industry.
Thank you so much. That's really, really kind of you.
Well, you're really, really brilliant is what you are. Max, good luck. Please come and don't forget where we are, and please come and see us again.
No, I'll come and see you for sure.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
It's out tomorrow. You are awesome and you're more than welcome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Vass Oss, it's over to you.
Our next guest never fails to make us hungry. With two Michelin stars jangling about in his pockets, this super chef is about to take festival grub to a whole new level. He'll put the yummy in your tummy as you live the life of Riley at Pub in the Park Marlow from tomorrow. So please welcome the delicious Tom Kerridge.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, lovely people. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, the reason I interrupted the bunch of Bananarama's there is because Mira came in. We're going to play four or five Bananarama songs back to back, because who wouldn't? What's wrong with that on the radio on Best Songs of the World Ever Wednesday? And she said to me, Tom's hanging on the phone, but he's fine. And I'm thinking, no, we can't have this, because, and it's not Mira's fault, it's definitely my fault, because Tom, you spent half your life now waiting for me to do things, because I remember at Carfest South, I saw you, you were going around the festival with your son and Beth, your lovely partner, and I said, Tom, could you help us out with this thing on stage in a bit, in front of the main stage on the hay bales with John Bishop? And you said, yeah, Chris, anything you want, lovely, 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 lush, 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 anything you like. So then you come and you hang around, and I keep you waiting for like an hour, so I can only apologise, and I can't keep you waiting for any longer doing anything, Tom, so I can only...
Honestly, mate, it's an absolute... I couldn't think of a nicer bloke to hang around doing stuff with.
Well, pal, thanks for all your input and all your help, and happen. Congratulations with this year's Pub in the Parks, and well done to the whole team, yourselves, all your team, all the Brand Events team for getting this back up and going again. PubintheParkUK.com. It culminates, it finishes off. Can you believe it's the last one this weekend?
I know. It's honestly, what an adventure this year's been. Obviously, last year has been shut down for everybody and everything, anything to do with festivals, food, drink, events, anything. And then this year, to be able to get the Pub in the Parks back, we've been one of the only events that have been able to get going and go properly. And it's gone so quickly, and it's been so magical. It's been so amazing that, you know, restaurants have been out and about. We, you know, at the beginning of the year, all of it was quite socially distanced and organised, and now it's almost back to complete normal. And last weekend in St Albans was incredible. The energy was fantastic. This weekend, Marlowe, the original one, the first one, the biggest one, actually, it's going to be amazing. We're so looking forward to it. And you know what? The weather, it looks like it's just going to hold out, and it's perfect for eating and drinking. So it's going to be an amazing, amazing weekend.
Well, congratulations, Tom, once again. And a lot of the time people go to festivals and they have an amazing time for so many different reasons. But if there is a sort of general bump in the road, it is usually, well, the catering could be better. We get it at Carfest. We have some amazing caterers, but I completely get it, especially, you know, now we're banging about whole food, plant-based stuff and better nutrition and better hydration. But of course, you lead with the food. So one doesn't have to worry about that at Pub in the Park. Once again, just remind people of the format of the pop-up kitchens and the chefs and how it works and how you can have a bit of everything for not as much as you might first of all think.
Yeah, so basically I invite all my mates who want to come and hang out in a park, and they all sell a dish for around about £6. And you basically turn up, you can buy little bits and bobs off everybody, eat loads of different food from all over. So, they, you know, I'm there, we're there, Paul Ainsworth is there, Andrew Pern's there, Steve Terry, Atal Culture, Sat Baines, the Pony and Trap, Josh Eggleton. So loads of different Michelin star chefs are there cooking beautiful food in that kind of street food vibe.
Yeah, it's so cool.
You hang around, you eat loads of different dishes, you say hello, you go, there's a fire pit demo, there's chef demos, then there's music. So it's kind of intertwined. Everything kind of mixes together. And it creates this really fun, wonderful vibe of food and music, and it's super family friendly, and it's got a great energy to it. And then, of course, this year we've been doing something very, very special. In each place, in each venue, we've been giving away something called 1,000 thank yous. And that's to 1,000, we've been giving away 1,000 tickets to NHS staff or frontline workers that have all been nominated by their local communities. So it's not even us that choose it. We tell the communities there's 1,000 tickets, nominate who you want. So it could be anybody that gets, you know, has done something so amazing to keep us going throughout the last 18 months. And then this year, obviously, the last one is Thursday night. We're opening with Roman Keating, and 1,000 thank yous. Hopefully you'll be there, Chris, and giving a big shout-out to all of those amazing NHS frontline workers that got us through.
I cannot wait. I mean, Big Chris said on Tuesday, you know, are you free on Thursday? I was coming anyway, to be honest, Tom. Don't tell him. And he says, will you do the thing on stage with NHS? Of course I will. I said anything you would like, and I meant it. Now, we must say big up to everybody else who does this kind of thing for a living in Marlowe, because, of course, in and around Marlowe, there's many great eateries, many great bars, many great suppliers, many great retailers, many amazing artisan pop-up shops and mum-and-pop shops. And so that'll all be going on as well. So in and around Marlowe at the weekend, if you can't get in, just come and soak up the energy and the atmosphere anyway. It's good anyhow, isn't it, Tom, where we live? But
we're so lucky, eh? Yeah. We're so lucky.
It's the Henley Festival as well this weekend. So the energy around, you know, the sort of 9 miles, 10 miles where we live, it's going to be amazing, pal. Amazing.
Yeah, it should be a great weekend. And we just keep our fingers crossed that it doesn't rain. And we'll all be all happy. Loads of food, loads of drink, loads of bands, loads of music. Everything will be great.
Tom, you're awesome. I love you. And I can't wait to see you tomorrow.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
The Charlatans still stand proud as indie band royalty, and for good reason. Not only are they amazing live, as we found out at Carfest, but they still look annoyingly the same as they did in 1994.
They look better. They look better.
Inviting us
by Miles.
His new book to The Listening Party, to end all listening parties. It's the brilliant Tim Burgess.
Morning, Tim. Thanks for coming in.
How are you doing?
Very very well. First of all, tell us about your outfit. That is awesome. Everybody's jealous of that outfit.
Well, it's my corduroy boiler suit.
Where'd you get it from?
I can't remember, actually. No,
it's
I've had it for, you know, over 2 years.
It's cool and comfy.
Cool and comfy, yeah. It's, you know, and it surprises people when I pull up at a garage, you know.
Yeah, because you've got a bit of that going on as well. Tim, what is the listening party? A couple of years old now? Approaching a couple of years old?
Well, it kind of started, really took off during lockdown, first lockdown, May 23rd. But I've been doing it for 10 years, really. Just originally just with Charlatans and my solo records, multiple times. But then on 23rd of March last year, I invited other people, Franz Ferdinand, Bonehead, Dave Rowntree from Blur, and Wendy Smith from Prefab Sprout to do a week of listening parties at 10 o'clock every night.
So what happens for people who don't know and want a glimpse through the crack in the door, you know, do I want to open this door any further? Do I want to be part of the gang? What happens?
Well, if you open the door further, the following week, there was three a night instead of one a night. And then during the height of the lockdown, we were doing up to 10 a day.
So you pick a song, pick an album, or what?
Pick an album, and we listen to it together while someone who made the album, you know, a significant member of the band or a photographer or both, you know. We had Simon Halfen and Paul Weller talking about our favourite shop. And as well as Simon White, the drummer. And they go through it as we all listen to it. So there's like detail of the album artwork or a song or how the song came about or what Paul was thinking about during the making of it. And you know, with the lockdown, it was very concentrated. Just felt like we were all part of something, listening together while someone, you know, like, who you know, Bonehead or Paul Weller or me tweeted through the record.
It's like a guided meditation, isn't it?
It is a guided meditation. It's funny you should say that.
Tell me, why is it funny? Come on.
Well, me and you at Carfest talked quite a lot about meditation.
Yeah, we did. And it's the same thing, isn't it? Because there's a guy that's qualified to take you around something or somewhere because of their knowledge about it. But then there's a guy that was and remains instrumental in whatever it is you're being guided through.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, we've had Paul McCartney, we've had Kylie, you know, we've had Liam. There was a John Lennon 50, Imagine 50 the other night. So Yoko and Sean and Klaus Voormann were all tweeting while we, you know, watched.
How does that feel for you?
I mean, I don't, you know, I was, it made me feel confident enough to tweet Paul McCartney and say, how do you fancy doing a listening party for McCartney 3? And, you know, with lots of artists, they kind of get back straight away. And obviously, Paul didn't, you know, it took a while. But seeing the McCartney emoji thumb up 6 weeks
which
later,
which is very McCartney-esque anyway.
Yeah, it really was. And it was such a beautiful thing, you know, and it kind of thought, well, you know, everyone is so behind it.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant. And because you love your music so much, I mean, you know, where in your house is the sort of inner sanctum of your music listening environment? And is it vinyl? Is it? Can you describe? Can you give us the image?
Yeah, I have a lot of records on a Visto shelving, which is important to me. A good shelving. And this vinyl, I mean, the listening parties have taken place in different rooms in the house, but in hotels as well, and at Charlatan Studios, you know, just friends' houses, and even I've done one on a bus, you know, on trains and things like that. The Wi-Fi's not often that good sometimes, but, you know, you know, I've done them everywhere, really.
But it's a beautiful concept, isn't it? Because, you know, parties are great because it's the getting together of people, you know, and there's a few better things that one person can do than give other people a reason to get together, which is great, either virtually or physically or a bit of both.
Yeah.
But then a listening party. Let's have a party where, you know, the main buffet is songs. It's yes. just that's just a gorgeous food for the ears.
And an album as well, which is kind of, you know, I mean, you know, I'm up for tracks and up for streaming and things like that, but it's good
feast.
To get but it's good to get the whole album and you know, and why track 8 is track 8, and you know, why there's an instrumental on it and things like that, you know, something that makes up a whole thing more than just a, I guess, a compilation track.
So it's awesome. It is awesome start to finish. And then there's the book, which is what we're talking about today, amongst other things, The Listening Party, Tim Burgess. How did you decide? Artists, bands and fans reflect on 100 favourite albums. How did you decide what to put in? What a load of fun. I mean, was this sort of decisions by a committee? Because this is a potential bonfire waiting to happen, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, to have Paul McCartney in there was a must.
Yeah, of course. Kylie. Yeah, I get that. But what was there a process for other, you know, to complete the 100?
Well, there was a cut-off point because I tried to get Iron Maiden in and when we ran out of time, they came, you know, they were the 666th listening party. And, you know, there was a cut-off point before that. It was important for me to have Julia Holter. It's one my favourite record. Over the last couple of years, it was important for me to have New Order in there, The Cure, Susie, and things that I really love. But then, you know, it was fantastic for the book to have other people in there as well. You know,
Tim,
I love it.
You're awesome, man.
You are too, mate.
Great to see you.
Yeah, great to see you too. Thanks, Chris.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
What if you stopped trying to do everything so you could finally get round to doing what counts? Our next guest draws on modern and ancient philosophies as he mildly terrifies us with how little time we're here for. His new book, 4,000 Weeks, Time and How to Use It, is out now. So high time, we made time for the very timely Oliver Berkman.
Good morning, Oliver.
Good morning.
And welcome to Guru Tuesday. You are our time guru for today. How does that feel?
A little bit alarming. I'll do my best.
Okay. Well, I've heard you before on other stuff longer than this is going to be, and you're amazing. This book is fantastic, Oliver. Thank you so much for writing. You wrote it for yourself, didn't you?
Oh, totally. I'm really glad that you liked it, but it was absolutely an act of self-therapy at the same time as well. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So it is fun to compartmentalise time. It can be fun. It can be really frightening, but it can be ultimately very useful. How much fun did you have compartmentalising time? And tell us the different genres that you had fun playing with.
Well, I mean, look, the title of this book, 4,000 Weeks, is just that's the amount of time that you get in weeks if you live to be sort of in your late 70s, 80 or so. And I just think that expressing it in weeks, I mean, I hope it's not so alarming that people don't want to hear more from me, but it is alarming in a way that like really sharpens the... brings things into focus, you know. I don't know why expressing it in weeks has that effect, but I basically had a panic attack when I first did the calculation. So
yeah. Well, I went one further. I then did mine in months. I'm 391 months and counting, which is not long at all, is it, really? And then if you go on from that and you look at your 4,000 weeks, and I've got 1,700 and something left, if I'm lucky, or 1,500, I can't remember. And then you think, well, hang on a minute, but lots of those are work weeks, so they don't really, so we'll cross those off. And then you get some holidays and you think, well, 3 weeks a year for, let's say, another 25 years. I've got 75 weeks holiday, actual holiday left. So you start thinking about that. That more... you know, it comes into focus more. And then Rachel was saying that her hubby, Alex, did an Edinburgh show called 7 Years in the Bathroom, because that's how long we spend in the bathroom. I suppose, and the whole thrust of your book is in the end, we over-plan for future time too much as opposed to just enjoying what little time we have in the moment.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm actually not trying to suggest that people go through the rest of their lives in a sort of white knuckle, desperate attempt to seize every minute and go base jumping every weekend or whatever. You know, I think it is much more about seeing that we have this finite little portion of time, and that's enough to do a lot of amazing things, but it's not enough to do everything. And I think when we try to a lot of the advice that people get on how to manage time better, how to be more efficient, it's all based on this idea that we could somehow fit everything in if we only found the right techniques and were a bit more self-disciplined. So it's more about like giving up that impossible quest, but in order to have the time and focus and attention to do a few things that you really care about.
Right. Every sentence is riven with gold in this book. Let me tell you, people listening, the book, once again, is called 4,000 Weeks, Time and How to Use It. Like, for example, here we go. I've highlighted this on page 32. The more you try to manage your time with the goal of achieving a feeling of total control and freedom from the inevitable constraints of being human, the more stressful, empty and frustrating life gets. It's all about this future, because in the future we have all the time in the world, don't we? But it just doesn't end up panning out like that.
Right. It's like in your mind, when you're planning your future life, you can include things that are not actually compatible. You can include being in a full-time, incredibly attentive parent, launching 5 businesses and spending all your life on meditation retreats up a mountain. But obviously, in reality, you're going to have to make choices between those things, even if they're all good, right? It's not just about getting rid of the boring stuff in life. I think it's about deciding that some things that would have been great to do, you're not going to get to do because you've decided something else is even more important.
Real freedom, you say, sometimes is to be found not in achieving greater sovereignty over your own schedule, but in allowing yourself to be constrained by the rhythms of community. And you know, in order for that to happen, we have to be present. And one of the ways we can be present in the here and the now is by not worrying about the then and the not now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and this is, again, it's totally a problem that I've suffered from for years. I'm not just lecturing from any perfect position, but this, we totally get so fixated on like using our time well for future purposes, for financial security, for job prospects, for raising good kids, whatever it is, that your focus is totally on the future. So there's no focus left for where you actually are now. But of course, the future never arrives. And when the future comes, the new future is still in the future. And so there's this phenomenon where you're never quite there. And then one day it all runs out, which seems like a depressing way to go about life. Really,
yeah, but it's also very realistic to look at it that way. And also, therefore, ultimately the most useful way to look at it. And you talk about, you know, the workaholic or you know, in the workaholic in a capitalist society who can't leave things alone, who has a cat. And what the problem here is that he can't love his cat. Because what he has to, because his cat is here and now, and why would he love that? Because he's got to invest in his future cat. So what he really wants to love, or claims to love, or is obsessed with loving instead, is his cat's kittens. Oh, but that's not enough, because his cat's kittens, what, you know, they will become cats, and they will be the present. So he's got to love his cat's kittens, and his cat's kittens, and it never stops, does it?
Right. And thank you to John Maynard Keynes for that specific example. I think what that shows, and what he was using it to show, is that like, you get a payoff for thinking in those terms. It sort of makes you feel immortal in a way. It makes you feel like your concerns go off and off and off into the future forever. And it's really uncomfortable to realize that they don't, and that you better, therefore, do something enjoyable or meaningful right now if you're ever going to do it. That's kind of, that makes people feel anxious and antsy, I think. But I think it's worth getting through that, because then you actually get to, yeah, love a cat. Right now, in the present.
Exactly. And if you've got a cat, why wouldn't you love it? Well, what's the point in you getting the cat in the first place? Thanks for your book, Oliver. You're a superstar. Thanks for your time. 4,000 weeks, time and how to use it. You're always welcome on this show. Cheers, all.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.